Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Tricia McCannon on Temple of Health Radio Show. Her new book, actually this is not her new book. We're going to be interviewing her on her new book in a couple of weeks. But today we're interviewing her on Return of the Divine Sophia, Healing the Earth Through the Lost Wisdom Teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalene. I believe this book came out a few years ago. And we've been trying to get together to do this interview, so we finally did. And I want to welcome you, Tricia. Thanks for coming on Temple of Health.
Oh, Susan, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. And just so that you know, it's only been out, I think, about a year and a half.
Okay.
Came out in March, I think, of 2016. So we're not that far behind.
Okay, good. Good. Well, I know you were here at Noetic Science talking about the Divine Sophia, and that was a great presentation, and the book is just wonderful. The book is really timely because of the shift that we need to do from the masculine dominance into a more balanced world where we actually might not destroy the planet.
You are so right, and that, of course, is at the core of the story. As you know, if you've read the book, and I get letters from people really all around the country, believe it or not, who have read the book, and there are actually study groups on both this book and my previous book about the Lost Tears of Jesus. And in this book, it's a beautiful weave, because you wind up being pulled into a true story, which is a story that happened to me when I was about 27 years old. Like a lot of people, I'd been raised sort of in a Judeo-Christian traditional family. My dad was Baptist, my mom was Methodist, and we became Episcopalian.
Right. That's a good blend.
Yeah, I always think of it as Catholic light. You know, you have all the beautiful ritual and the incense and the prayers and the singing and the genuflecting. I mean, it's quite lovely, but no guilt or blame or shame, which is really
there
good.
You go. Yeah.
And so, you know, I had sort of, I guess, always thought of the divine or God in a very big picture way, but of course I had been programmed to with that idea of it was an old man with a long flowing beard, and you know, and I never could figure out in my own mind how the God of the Old Testament, which seemed to be about blame and shame and punishment and recrimination and wars and things like that, it was a very heavy-handed patriarchal God, how that God fit with the God of Jesus, which was the God of love, forgiveness, infinite oneness, and wonder. And so it just didn't make sense to me growing up. And so, you know, I always thought Jesus was great, but, you know, how about this other thing?
Right.
And when I was about 27 years old, as you know if you've read the book begins really where I have a very lucid, powerful dream that I've gone back to school for my master's degree, which is interesting way that the subconscious, you know, is speaking to you to become a master.
Right.
And I wake up, and in the room there's all these extraterrestrial symbols on the wall, and somehow I know that this is like an angelic language. And mm-hmm. but I try to remember the symbols, but I fall back asleep, and when I wake up, of course, they're gone. So I could only remember one symbol, which was a circle with a dot at the center, which I knew meant the beginning of all things and the end of all things. But I didn't mm-hmm. even know how I could possibly know that, because I had no idea what it was. So I went to the library, this beautiful, big, wood-polished, gorgeous library, to see if I could find some reference to that symbol. And while I was there, the student assistant came to get me and said, "Hey, there's a phone call for you at the front desk." I'm like, "That's impossible. You know, nobody even knows I'm here." So I go mm-hmm. and I pick up the phone, and this woman's voice says, "Is this Tricia McCannon?" And I'm like, "Yeah, who's this?" And she said, "We've called to tell you that your dreams are real." Well, as you can imagine, this just like threw me back on my heels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Who is this?" And she said, "We're from the priestesses of Isis, and that's all we're permitted to tell you at this time." And then she mm-hmm. hung up the phone. And then I woke up, and it was a dream within a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there were several clues, one of them being the symbol that with the circle and the dot, which, of course, I was to find out did mean actually the ancient symbol for the creator or for the sun. And they mm-hmm. use that symbol now in physics to represent the singularity, the dot at the center, in other words, the thing from which all things come, and then the circle is the event horizon. So that's, in other words, like the creation of the universe, everything that derives from that dot at the center. And so, you know, this is really how the book begins. And about 2 months later, of course, I was still very much in the mystery. I wound up going into this beautiful little store that you may or may not even remember. It was here in Atlanta for a while, called Illumina. And, you know, thick carpets, beautiful jewelry, crystals, statues. So I'm looking at this Egyptian statue. This is my lunch hour. And the woman behind the counter says, "Are you interested in Egyptian things?" And I'm turned around, and I'm like, "Yeah, I've been dreaming of the priestesses of Isis." And she said, "Oh, tell me your dreams." And I said, "Well, I'm not sure you're going to understand my dreams. I'm not even sure I do." And she said, "Try me. I'm a high initiate in the priestesses of Isis." Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, as you can imagine, you don't run into those every day. Right. And so this really was the beginning of my journey, because this was to become really my shaman teacher. Mm-hmm. And in the journey, you know, I go and visit her, I spend the day with her, and the things that she says to me in that afternoon completely shift my reality. Like, for example, she reminded me that all mammals are created biologically female first, and that the existence of the male is because of the release of an additional androgen. So, in other words, the version of reality that I had been weaned on was, hey, God created man, and then, you know, Adam got lonely.
Took a rib.
So the rib came out, and the woman was the companion, and this was the justification for women being subservient to men and not equal. And, of course, this was all just patriarchal shibbles, but basically what I wound up discovering was that that's not what the biology says. The biology says is that every mammal is created female first, and that the existence of the male is a subset at a biological level of the female energy. So that would tend to indicate, you know, as above, so below, that I'm sure that the divine creator is really beyond sex or gender, but it would tend to indicate that the goddess, the divine feminine, created the universe. And this course blew my mind. And, you know, in the book, I realized it's very clear that my guides want me to begin to study and learn about this. But basically, I was a scaredy cat because my, you know, upbringing was very traditional. And I was already studying Eastern philosophy, religion. I was already meditating. I was already practicing the art of soul travel, working with masters in the Far East, which was, you know, far out on the outer limit edge for my very traditional Christian family. So I really stepped back from this, and it took about 5 years for events to unfold in such a way that I could no longer really ignore it. And so finally I called Shasta, and I said, "I think it's time." And so she convened a circle of women, beautiful circle of women, that came from every walk of life, from lawyers and mothers and doctors and professors and people really of a lot of intelligence and grounded education in the world, who were open to learning. And what we discovered during our many years of study together is that there's a secret history to this planet that most of us know nothing about. And in this history, for thousands of years, God was considered, or the Creator, was considered the divine feminine, the divine mother. And as long as that model was held, men and women ruled together in a partnership model, and there was no war. And this, of course, blew my mind, because like most of us, you know, we turn on the television day in and day out, and we see raping and pillaging and murder and mayhem and war and chaos and killing and guns and lobbyists and murder of the animals. And, I mean, we see so much aggression and hate out there in the world. And, of course, that's not what the male is meant to be. The male is also, in his positive aspects, an incredibly divine and enlightened being, as we can see when we look around at some of the male masters and teachers that have been here. But that is the male that has gone out of balance with the divine female.
Right.
We need the male and the female together. And, you know, there's a positive female and there's also a negative female. There's a positive male and there's a negative male. And so, you know, if you have the negative male suppressing the positive female, in other words, for about 3,000 years, in many cultures, especially we see the Jewish culture and so forth, women, the rights of women were taken away. They weren't allowed to work or own land or to stand on their own. They had to belong to a man, either a father or as a wife. They could be traded, they could be sold, they could be given in slavery or marriage, and they basically were used to, you know, have sex and raise the children and make the food and clean the house. But the man could simply give them a piece of paper and divorce them at will.
Right.
And the woman had no recourse except to become a prostitute or die or starve on the street or a beggar. So, you know, that suppresses the positive feminine aspects that allow a woman or person who happens to have incarnated in a female body to go on to develop her mind, her heart, her spirit, her artistic ability, her talents, as you have as such a wonderful doctor, as a writer, as a teacher, to really have choices in life. And, of course, the men have always had these choices, you know.
Right.
They could be anything. You know, many of them were warriors because the male patriarchal, without the balance of the feminine, winds up resulting in warlike cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But they could be, you know, herbalists and doctors and scribes, and they could be spiritual teachers and priests and tradesmen and craftsmen and engineers and builders, and they could earn their own living, and they could more or less steer their own life in a particular direction, where women were completely beholden to the grace of either a good man or an abusive man. And they had no choice. And so we have just are coming out of a dark age of this. You know, we only got the right to vote, women, in 1922.
I think it was last week that they decided to allow women in Saudi Arabia to drive.
Unbelievable. Just last week. Just last week. And, I mean, when you look at it, for example, reproductively, it took something like 30 years for the pill to be allowed in Japan, where the right to have Viagra was passed in 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so it's just like, you know, out of balance, and it's been out of balance. And this is, in my opinion, why we are having so many of the problems that we're having, because if you really kind of drew up four columns and put positive masculine and positive feminine in the columns in the center, and then negative masculine over to one side and negative feminine, when you suppress the positive feminine, you wind up with women who are catty, backstabbing, and, you know, manipulative. And they use the only tool that they've had, which is their sexuality, for personal gain. And then you wind up with negative masculine, you know, male dominating, abusive, and lying, cheating, you know, scared, manipulating women. So you wind up with a negative of both. We really need to be moving to the positive for men to really claim more and more of their own beautiful natures in a positive masculine.
Mm-hmm.
But the best way to do that is to begin to embody more of the divine feminine. So, and women too. I mean, when women finally, you know, women's lib came up, as you noticed in the beginning, I mean, they were so angry for a long time, some of them, that they became, women were embodying the negative masculine. They became, you know, competitive and dominating and, you know,
Did you know that the CIA funded Ms. magazine for almost all of its time it was printed? That the actual, the female liberation movement, which you and I were both alive then, was actually funded and conceived by the CIA. And the reason that they wanted it was because they wanted the mothers to have less influence over their children. And they figured, because the state would then be able to take over, you know, like that you wouldn't have a dominant mother figure and a good home life. You know, it would be more institutional type education, which could be molded. And
well,
so the CIA was very much behind the Women's Lib movement.
Well, I did not know that piece, but, you know,
it's true. Look it up. It's true. They funded MS Magazine. It would have gone under.
I'm completely surprised. I think because, you know, really, it is true. We're learning how important those first 7 years are in a child's life. And by having...
And look at working mothers, single mothers who are working mothers. The children are raised in daycare.
Yeah, it's very hard. And it used to be, you know, you could have a daddy or one parent work and make enough money to support a family of four or five.
Mm-hmm.
My dad
did it.
You
can't do that now. Mm-hmm.
But you can't now. Now you have to have two working parents. And who's
right.
really gained are the people who, you know, want your money for real estate. You know, you buy a house
mm-hmm.
for $300,000 and you're really paying $600,000 by the time you pay the interest. And
mm-hmm.
so and now it's taking two working adults to have that kind of home. So, yeah, all of this is, from my point of view, it's all the negative patriarchy.
Right.
And, I mean, I belong probably to 20, 30 different organizations that are about trying to help the animals and the rainforest and the rivers
mm-hmm.
and stop the, you know, drilling in the Arctic refuge that they're going after. This is all the crazy Trump stuff that's going on where it's just all about, you know, self-service, and he's going back to, you know, oil, gas, and coal, so never
mm-hmm.
mind that we destroy our water table with fracking and destabilize the continental shelf so that we have sinkholes, you know, never mind.
And earthquakes.
And earthquakes. Never mind that we, you know, put more pollution into the air. Never mind that we literally
mm-hmm.
spill oil in the oceans and, you know, ruin the planet. It's all about personal greed and money. And, you know, what can I get for myself and screw everybody else?
Right.
And this is very sad.
Especially when all the energy technologies are available, but the patents are just sitting on the shelf.
You're absolutely
right. They've been bought
right.
out by the oil and gas companies.
You're right.
I mean, the technology all exists. We don't really have to have expensive energy, and we don't have to have a oil and gas-based, natural gas-based society because we have other
right.
energy devices. Yeah,
you're right. I mean, since the time of Nikola Tesla, you know, by his discovery that you could tap into the natural magnetic field
mm-hmm.
of the planet, we've
right.
discovered that basically something the size of maybe a toolbox or a bread
mm-hmm.
box or a cabinet could basically fuel a town or a village or a community. But of course, what that does is it decentralizes our addiction to being on their grid. And
mm-hmm.
so by decentralizing that piece, in other words, if I could get water, food, and power on my own, in other words, from the local area, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't have to be enslaved.
You don't have to work 7 days a week.
Well, we'd still, you know, we'd still have plenty of bills, for heaven's sakes. It would just cut down on our energy bills. But
right.
It would help the planet. It would help
the
Earth. And we don't have another home. As much as they keep talking about terraforming Mars, I just look at this and say, you guys are crazy. You know, yeah, it was probably a wonderful planet at one point before, you know, that big swathe got cut out of the base of it and it started
mm-hmm.
losing its oxygen and then its, you know, waters. You're going to go back up there with this rocky desert planet and try to get that going instead of just simply being responsible and using, you know, non-polluting
mm-hmm.
energies at home on our beautiful paradise world? I mean, it really, really makes no sense. It's crazy thinking, actually, I think.
Yeah.
And so
well.
To me, these are all symptoms of this out-of-balance
mm-hmm.
position. And, you know, my book is really not meant to be so political. It really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, shamanic, it's historical, it's personally transformative. It's also, you know, really taking a look at how this patriarchal belief system also infiltrated our religion. And, you know, I think, as you've heard me say, that there's a wonderful aspect of the divine masculine. And, you know, the move from God as the Divine Mother, the Goddess, is not only, you know, immanent, but also transcendent, and also not only transcendent, meaning, you know, above it all, but also immanent, meaning present in every leaf, every blade of grass, every beautiful tree. The divine is in nature, it's in you, it's in me, it's in the animals. And, of course, this means that, you know, we really wouldn't want to kill, you know, all of those things, because we would be able to have the veils fall from our eyes and see the luminous beauty in the creation of the world around us. You know, we wouldn't be out there wanting to do so much harm and damage to others.
Right.
So what happens is when we start thinking, you know, heaven's up, hell is underneath us, just by subconscious association, we begin to, you know, what's the dirt? Oh, it's just a bunch of dirt under our feet. Well, actually, it's our home. And everything we consume, from our food to our clothes to our water, comes from the earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without the earth, we'd be floating out there in outer space, you know, no oxygen.
And not for very long, yeah.
Not for very long, it's correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, the book is really a journey, but, you know, because I am a historian and a researcher, you know, Shasta, this wonderful teacher, would say something, and I would be like, what? That's not what I learned in Sunday school. So then I roll up my sleeves, and I do a chapter or two of real historical grounded research.
Mm-hmm.
That book has about 500 footnotes, like my Jesus book has about 1,200, and this new book that we'll talk about in a few weeks has about 500, and that's about the landscapes of heaven. So, you know, I seem like I take these complicated subjects, but I must tell you, I get letters from people every week, and they just touch me to the core that they have read this book. It's like I read two today from people who wrote me and said, you know, all my life I've, you know, felt these truths, but I couldn't put it all together. You know, and I've studied one religion after another, and I couldn't figure out how it all worked until I finally read your book and I got it. And that really makes all this time that I spend working worth it. You know, these books take a lot of energy, as I'm sure you know. I kind of go into the cave. The Jesus book, I was in that cave for 3 years. And
the
book about a year and a half. And then this new book about a year and a half. And I spend a lot of time with the divine and crafting the books and researching the books to be able to create a breadcrumb trail that other people can follow. And if they actually want to do the research, all they have to do is flip to the back where I've got glossaries and appendixes and bibliographies. And, you know, I've done it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kinds of letters really touch my heart and make me feel like it's all worthwhile.
Right.
You know, and I get them more from women than I get them from men. Women who are trying to really embody and embrace other archetypes besides just the ones we were given in Christianity, which, you know, were basically the virgin, poor Mary, the whore, poor Mary Magdalene, you know, Eve, the poor Eve that's to blame for all suffering because she ate the damn apple. Even though Adam ate that same apple, you know, never mind, you know. And then Lilith, of course, who was completely demonized by the patriarchy as disobedient wife. And, of course, that's not Lilith's story at all. I mean, if you ever read Edgar Cayce, he talks about how Amelius, which was an earlier incarnation of Jesus, and Lilith, who was a female incarnation of the female Christ, actually came to Earth about 100,000 years ago to help in the earlier incarnations of Atlantis.
Right.
And, you know, then, you know, how in the world poor little Lilith got turned into a disobedient, you know, demon is like so crazy. But, I mean, those are the only archetypes women have been given for several, you know, 2,000 years or more. And
well,
so
there was an interesting part of your rancha that I felt was very telling in terms of evolution. It turns out that, you know, because there's so many inhabited planets and so many, you know, solar systems and so many galaxies, I mean, it's just huge numbers of planets with life on them, there's actually a system that occurs. And one of the systems that occurs is that, and I think this was when what you were speaking of, and then also Adam and Eve, when somebody needs a genetic upgrade, they send an Adam and Eve figure in, and those two people actually have sex with as many people as they can in order to upgrade the genetics.
Oh, my goodness.
That's actually a part of evolution, and it's done deliberately by the masters.
I had not heard this.
Your rancha.
But it is a thick book, let's face it.
It's hard to get through the whole book.
I'm sure there's a lot of men that would love to volunteer for that.
Yeah. But that's an upgrade. And so, you know, that's what Adam and Eve were actually sent to do, was to genetically upgrade the planet.
Well, that does make sense. And, you know, all sorts of ways that can happen. Certainly, it can happen through evolution, but it can also happen, as you say, through sort of genetic intervention where people are moved from one planet to another planet in order to seed the next, you know.
Seed the next, exactly. Exactly. And I believe, I mean, we could, you know, we could check it out clairvoyantly, but I believe that that is actually a fairly common move when things are stuck, you know.
Well, that's kind of in a way where we are now. I think that we have been stuck in a very negative pattern and that we're coming out of the pattern. But that, you know, this is when you start hearing the stories of all these gifted children, the star seeds, and all that, is basically our DNA. Although there's a lot of it that's obviously really, really good, you know, seems to have some kind of an aggressive, warlike, dominant bent to it. Now, maybe we could say it's the way we've been enculturated. Maybe it's that.
And well, I think more than anything, it was the fact that when the original people were made from, you know, there was Homo erectus, and then Anunnaki DNA was added to give you Homo sapien. And the problem with that little shift was that the regular DNA did not have access to the higher realms. Remember, the whole DNA is like really, really basic. Okay, we don't have as many strands of DNA as we should with the higher light frequencies in them. So basically, what you can say is that the higher DNA is now coming in through the younger generation, the ones that are just so amazing, and they're also much more androgynous children. You know, they're not so male or so female.
Well,
what I think's happening.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation, and I think it's very needed. And I mean, when you think about the bravery a soul would have to have to volunteer, number one, to come down to this crazy barbaric civilization.
Mm-hmm.
That's all of us that are listening to this program.
Probably,
the ones that would volunteer to come in, let's say, as gay or as transgender. That takes a whole nother.
Right. It does. It takes a lot of very. But, you know, basically what we're supposed to be and what we will be after ascension is that we will all have, you know, spiritual sight and hearing. So the idea of free will kind of goes out the door because you always know what's the best and highest because you hear it, see it, feel it, know it. So you're not going to, you know, do things that are going to hurt you because you really know what you need to do. You know what your path is. You know what your place in the world is. So you go ahead and do that and get fulfilled. Whereas down here in the third dimension, people really don't have that information. You know, they can go on spiritual quests and they can meditate. You know, you and I spent many, many years meditating many, many hours to get to the point where we're at now. It wasn't, you know, we were born with certain gifts, but we had to work very hard in a very dense environment in order to get the level of awareness that we have now. But children are being born with that now. I mean, they're coming in much better than we were, you know, much higher, much better spiritual guidance than we had.
You are absolutely right. I have to tell you, before my assistant was here earlier today, and she wound up bringing in a box, which I just opened, and it's my new book. And it's like, oh,
really? Great.
So exciting. And I have 16 color plates, 16 pages of color images, and they're so beautiful. I'm just so happy. I can't wait.
So what's the name of your new book?
It's called Angelic Origins of the Soul, Discovering Your Divine Purpose.
There you go.
The cover is so beautiful. It's wonderful artist named Marios Michael George, and his work is so angelic. It's that high frequency blues and purples and golds. And this is just, I fell in love with this piece. It's a very angelic woman with her hands open and light coming out of her hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I found his work some years ago, and I really wanted to include his work inside the book. And I had sent them some of these early images of some of his saying, well, let's talk about this. And they said, what if we picked one for the cover? And I was like, I'm thrilled, because his work is very beautiful.
Right.
And
that's great.
So I'm just, and of course, it's got about 100 black and white illustrations. You know, my background was art and photography and graphic design. And I'm also am a hermeticist, you know, and I teach the great spiritual mysteries, which is the in a way that the ancients encoded this deep information into these symbols. And so I always have about 100 black and white illustrations in my books, because I like the pictures. And
right.
I think it helps to explain what I'm saying so much better if you can see the pictures. Then you're like, oh, I get it. So yummy. This is just like so exciting to actually get it at the point that we're doing a radio show, Susan.
Yeah, and we'll be doing let's see, what date is that again? Let me take a look here. We're going to be interviewing Trish on this book on it'll air 10/28, which is Saturday at noon. So
I have to
make sure you come back for that interview.
Yeah, and it's got all I have, you know, this book is very cool. It's all about us, really. It's about the journey of the soul. And there's a whole section here called The Landscapes of Heaven, and I just adore this section because it really talks about where we come from and where we're going and how we fall into amnesia, how we fall into forgetfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I as a clairvoyant, I've read for about 6,000 people around the world, and I've really spent a long time tracing our higher angelic origins up into the higher world, and then discovering how we fall asleep at the wheel and how we begin to wake ourselves up. And once we really get how incredibly divine and wonderful we are, and how we, you know, chosen to basically come down here to Earth School. That's really kind of where we are. But we're having to take the classes, you know, kind of with our memory gone and one hand tied behind our back. So it seems like pretty a hard course curriculum, because no one gives us the cheat sheet, which I think would help a great deal, don't you?
Right, I do. The instruction manual.
You are here. You have come from here. You are learned these things. So get with the program.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Urantia also talks about the fallen angels. You know, all the angels were given choices at that time. They could either choose to fall dimensionally, or they could not. They could decide not to. And so the whole idea of the fallen angels or the watchers, you know, that's a very, very important concept in the, you know, the whole angelic realm, too.
Yeah, you know, that I always love having conversations with you, because you are the coolest, Susan Kolb. You are. You're like this For those of you who have not met her in person, she's very pretty, and she has an amazing surgical center, and you help to save people's lives and make their lives better, and you're very competent in the normal straight Clark Kent world of medicine, and yet you bring in holistic concepts and herbs and healing and talking to the spirit of the person, as well as doing clinical lab tests and
mm-hmm.
all the things that Western medicine requires, and so you treat body, mind, and spirit, and I really love all that about you.
Well,
you're amazing, and I'm so happy that you live here in Atlanta. You're treasures of this city, in my opinion.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I just call it like I see it.
Well, we've been friends for a long time. I think over 30 years. I think that's about right. I think
my
I came
only
here 30
complaint
years ago.
Is I don't see you enough. We're
right.
both so busy doing
busy.
Our mission here on Earth. And I want to just
and you
tell
travel
you,
a lot, too.
I do. In fact, I was on the road. I've been, this year alone, I've been in New York City. I was speaking at the Edgar Cayce Center. I was the keynote speaker at Dolores Cannon's wonderful transformation conference in
mm-hmm.
June. I was in L.A. doing goddess workshops. I was
mm-hmm.
in Mount Shasta speaking at a wonderful conference with Dr. Bruce Lipton and Michael Cremo,
mm-hmm.
the archaeologist, and some other wonderful speakers. And I was up in Seattle teaching about Atlantis and all the discoveries of these pyramids that we're discovering now with sonar, both under the water and above the water and under the sand. That's obviously portions of Atlantis. And then I did a whole another incredible presentation in Ashland, Oregon on Antarctica. And so I've been quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm creating a new website this month, which will probably be up maybe sometime in November. But I'm going to be back in New York the first weekend of November teaching really a class that will be about this book. It's called The Path of Mastery is the name of that class. And then
mm-hmm.
this weekend, this Saturday, right shortly after your our radio show airs, which is 12 to 1, I'm doing a webinar from 3 to 6 Eastern Standard Time, so people could actually immediately go and sign up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really on the subject of my book. It's called Blueprint of the Soul, and it's about our angelic origins. It's only $33, and you can go to my website, which is TrishaMcCannon.com or www.TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com, and that's spelled T-R-I-C-I-A, that spelling, and McCannon's just like it sounds, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N.com, and you'll see on the very front page there's a banner about the webinar. You just click on that, takes you to a page, and there are two links on that page. You just click on that, and you can register for $33. They'll send you the link for the class, and you're good to go. And they even let you go back and listen to it again. I've been doing these wonderful webinars to a company out in L.A. called Portal to Ascension, and I've probably done about 12 of them this year, quite a lot of work. But I have a new class that I'm going to be launching with a different company altogether that will be a 7-part series on on the Lost Years and Secret Teachings of Jesus. And so if you go to my website, you can sign up on my newsletter under the media room. It's just very
mm-hmm.
easy to do it, and then I'll let you know when that's happening. And I also have a summit that I'm doing. Someone's just asked me to do a summit on the Divine Feminine, and I think that's the first weekend in December as well. So I just say go to my website, sign up for the newsletter, and I send out newsletters occasionally to let people know if I'm traveling or if I'm doing a special thing. And next year I'm hoping to find 12 people that I can really, really mentor who are really ready to get their books out there. People
mm-hmm.
like the kind of audience that listens to you. So,
right. Yeah.
I'm planning to do an online class that a lot of people can take that's a smaller class, and then from that I'm going to try to pick 12 really wonderful people that I can get behind, because
mm-hmm.
as you know, the hardest part really is opening those doors with the agents and the publishers and
right, yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Well, all of it sounds wonderful. It really does.
Have you seen
the recent photographs coming out of Antarctica with the explosions, mountains being blown apart?
I have not, but what I do know is that they have found an extraterrestrial city, very sophisticated, under about 2 to 3 miles of ice down there, and they found 3 motherships. And there are about 7 different nations down there really trying to kind of, you know, get ahead. And, of course, the U.S. is probably the leading one. We have McMurdo Station that's got about 1,000 to 1,500 people stationed. And, you know, I have not seen that.
That just
but I
happened
will say,
last, well, it came, it was on Before It's News on Saturday in the AM edition. So it probably just happened at the end of last week. But it certainly is very interesting, and maybe some of the best evidence of the alliance activity down there. So we don't know for sure. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what different people have to say about it.
What do you think it is?
I think it's evidence that the alliance may be cleaning up down there. So we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to wait until the people who are, you know, connected with the secret space program and the other you know, the extraterrestrial alliance say about it. But, I mean, we're talking big explosions here. They're not nuclear because it's not the cloud, but it is huge explosions.
Don't you think that perhaps the powers that be that are trying to get to that city I'm just trying to break through the ice.
Yeah, I don't think that my information is that none of that was destroyed. It wasn't meant to destroy anything, like with what you just said, you know, the 3 big ships and all of that, the cities and everything. That wasn't what it was. This is like a mountain being blown apart. So I think it's more like I said, I really don't know what it is, but we'll have to see just pay attention to some of the reports coming out and see what that was.
Interesting.
It really is. It's when you look at it, I mean, the headline of it was, you know, did a meteor hit or did a UFO do this, you know, all this stuff, which I don't think either of those is true. I think it's evidence that something significant in the secret wars that probably are mostly taking place in space are actually now manifested on Earth. So
you think it's an action, if you had to speculate, obviously this is speculation, between the positive and the negative forces, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying the alliance versus the cabal, you know, that battle's been going on for a while now. Now, most of it's been going on out in space. You know, it's not been on the planet itself. Other than there were a few underground bases that the cabal controlled that were evidently, according to reports, I mean, I have no direct knowledge, of course, were taken out with scalar weapons. So, do you remember a few years ago there was an earthquake in Virginia?
No.
Well, there were no fault lines there. This was a scalar weapon, you know, an underground base being taken out with scalar weapons.
Right.
So, yeah. So anyway, we'll have to see. I mean, maybe in 2 weeks I'll do some research and I can update people
I would love to know some of the
people that are in the know, because I'm certainly not. I don't know anything other than, well, I saw the pictures, you know, and then I didn't think it was nuclear. I felt it was scalar
if you find that link, by all means, you know, send it to me. I will tell
you. Yeah, it's Before It's News. I'll send it to you. It's Before It's News, but it was Saturday morning. Yeah, they have an AM and a PM edition, and it was in the AM. It was just there's just the pictures of the explosion. You just have to guess what it is.
Right. Well, the reason I guess I was saying this for our audience, you know, every January I always take my computers in and get them checked for viruses, and I was of course clean in January. And I started doing an investigation for the images for the Antarctica presentation, this incredible slideshow that I wound up presenting in the spring and the summer. And in the process, I got over 550 viruses. I almost had my computer go down. So I think that the powers that be do not want us
they
to know.
They don't want us to look at these images.
They don't.
No, no,
so I would caution any of our listeners, they're really interested in this, that Antarctica presentation that I did, I paid a very high price for it.
Yeah.
And
so
consequently, I would say, you know, if you're interested, it's archived right now on portaltoascension.org, portaltoascension. And so you can go there and you can watch it, and I will probably be re-recording it by the beginning of the year and get it up on my own website. And so, but I would just caution anybody who's interested in this subject to be very, very cautious about going, because I think that they put malware on.
Oh, there's no question. That's very true. In fact, you have to be careful on Before It's News. Every so often when I click on something, of course it says warning, you are now leaving Before It's News. But sometimes when you click on something, then of course your computer goes completely down and all sorts of weird stuff happens, you know. I mean, so far, I've got an IT guy, so it's pretty easily fixed. But the point is that they, it's very common when you're researching these topics that you pick up malware. So I would encourage people to look at your presentation rather than researching it for themselves.
Yeah,
you know, you've already
already paid the price. You don't need to pay it too, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, that is true. But you can watch on Before It's News if you can find it. That's the problem. Before It's News is difficult to search. You can watch the video and there won't be any malware on that, because on that site it's okay.
Well, you know, by all means, just send me the link.
I'll send it to you. Yeah, no problem.
And as usual, it's always illuminating. And let me say, if you want to, you know, maybe we can talk next week and figure out a date. I'm here most of the month of October before I go off to speak in November. And I think it's the first weekend in November in New York. And so I don't know how far your broadcast goes, but are you all up and down the East Coast?
We're all over the world. I mean, it's a internet broadcast, so it's
It's
not, you know.
Well, I am back, and then I'm back in the end of November, and of course I'm home then for several months, working on a new book about the legacy of the gods and getting these new presentations up so that people who are interested in all this incredible information can go and find it, and then next year, probably in the first quarter next year, I'll be launching the writing program. So by all means, just go to my website, trishamcannon.com, and sign up for the newsletter, and that way I'll keep you informed about what's going on. And it has been such a pleasure. Are we at the end of our hour, or how are we doing?
We are, and I do want to recommend everybody to go back. You can go to plasticos.com under resources and radio. We actually have all the interviews from 2011 on the website. So Tricia has been on several times. We've talked about her Jesus book and some of the other books
Angel
she's mentioned.
Book, my Dialogues of the Angels book.
Right. And
right.
So those interviews are up. And, of course, this one will be up, and we'll, you know, you can certainly go to any of the archived interviews, and they're all wonderful. Her Jesus book turned the academic Christian world on its ear. I think it was really a revolutionary book. One of the books that just I just couldn't put it down. It was so amazing.
Well, the Sophia book I think is also like that, and I appreciate you so much saying that. It always moves my heart when I get these letters from people who say, you know, finally everything makes sense, and it's a profoundly honoring.
Very
book.
Important right now to understand these concepts.
It is, because, you know, we don't really realize, most people don't, because this has been largely hidden from us, that Jesus incarnated in the middle of a time and a location where he was surrounded by the mystery schools of Greece, Persia, Egypt, the Druids, the Buddhists, the Brahmins, and, of course, he was a student of all these teachings, and they knew he was coming and had been awaiting his coming for quite some time. And so that book really shares not only the information about where he went and who he studied with and what they taught, but how it's reflected in his teaching. So you know, I think in this time when we're working for world unity instead of world division, understanding that it's not the, it doesn't have to be the Jews or the Christians or the Muslims on one side murdering and killing the infidels or the pagans or whatever they're calling everybody else this week, that in fact, you know, the great spiritual mysteries of these sages and masters, you know, have basically birthed many of these greatest, great teachers like Buddha and Zoroaster and Moses and Jesus, most certainly. And that his mission was to try to bring all the teachings together into a universal path, not to discredit, kill, murder, eliminate, or blame others,
right,
but rather to bring them into the circle of wholeness. And that's where I think we need to be going as a planet.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tricia. It was a great interview. And,
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I know we'll be talking towards the end of the month, but let's see if we can talk on the phone next week personally. And
okay.
I'll text you or you text me, and let's figure out supper, okay?
All righty. Take care,
hon. Thank you so much for all our listeners out there, and we'll see you soon.
All right. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Tricia McCannon on her book, Return of the Divine Sophia. And we will be interviewing her on the 28th of October on her new book about the angelic, what is the name of the book again? Angelic. Anyway, we'll be interviewing her on the 28th of October. Thank you for joining us.